91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Stay tuned for our popular At Your Service edition about pet care. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Pet owners view animals as beloved family members and share concerns and dedication to good health. We'll visit with our expert contributors, including Dr. Ian Kupke, the lead practitioner of the Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall. And pet care isn't just physical. Some pets need help in the behavior arena. So on hand is animal behaviorist Adel Miedes, who operates Canine Advisors. Most often, of course, his advice is aimed at human behavior. Our number 1-800-743-9576 to talk to the experts. Pet care at your service next, after NPR and regional news. And we return 7 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and, of course, Bonnie Berman. At your service this hour with our regular feature of call and advice for pet lovers.
You might want to jot down our number. It's 1-800-743-9576. That's 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, we'll take your emails, radio@WLRN.org.
First, we welcome back Dr. Ian Kupke. He's the owner and chief practitioner of the Sable Chase Animal Clinic. That's in Kendall. He's on hand for all sorts of pet-related calls, of course. Welcome back, Doctor. Always good to see you.
Delighted to be here, Joe.
Ready to go. All right.
And as usual, we have Adel Miedes, who's a dog trainer and behaviorist who operates Canine Advisors. The motto there is dog advice.
As always.
For humans, as we are usually the cause of the discord. Welcome to you, Adel.
Thanks for having me again, Bonnie.
So we're at your service, and we're going to be talking about service animals, at least to begin today's show. September is National Service Dog Month. We have 2 days left in National Service Dog Month. There seems to be a lot of confusion as to what a service dog is exactly, as opposed to a therapy dog or an emotional support animal. So let's do the defining,
okay.
The quintessential definition of each of them. Dr. Kupke. There's
a lot of misunderstanding out there. So let's imagine three categories: service dogs, therapy dogs, and another group called emotional support animals. Service dogs are defined by the American with Disabilities Act as a dog that has been trained to perform tasks that alleviate the effects of a disability.
So as in a seeing eye dog.
So yes, think of them legally. It seems a shame, but it's legally they're considered medical equipment. They're literally another device to help people with a genuine disability deal with their disability.
Okay.
So, for example, a dog that is trained to alert a handler that a seizure is imminent is a service dog. But on the other hand, therapy dogs don't receive special training. So, basically, service dog goes through a very complex degree of training to service specific needs for a disabled person, registered disabled person. Therapy dog, they get special training, but they're not trained to address the needs of a disabled person. They're trained to interact with anybody. So basically, they're out there visiting schools, hospitals, nursing homes, hospice care centers, and the like. They do important work, but they don't have the same rights and privileges as a service dog.
Okay.
And finally, emotional support animals, they don't get any training at all. they don't provide learned behavior. They don't provide tasks that mitigate the problem with a disability. What they do is they provide emotional support to their handlers.
Which is pretty hard to define.
And that's very, very difficult to define. And this is where it gets kind of, I'm British, I have to use the word dodgy. So Emotional support animals, or ESAs, have a couple of rights. They're allowed in housing units with no pet policies because this is considered a reasonable accommodation under the Fair Housing Act.
Okay.
They are allowed to accompany their handlers in the cabins of commercial aircraft.
Are they allowed in public places that don't allow pets?
No. A licensed...
Is size a factor, though?
Well, there's actually a very interesting...
If your emotional support dog is a Rottweiler...
Well...
this is the interesting part.
This is where it becomes interesting, yes.
I'm sorry, it's not an emotional support dog.
No.
It's an emotional support animal. It could be a snake, it could be a spider.
Or a turkey.
A turkey.
Or a llama.
Or a llama.
Or a llama.
That's right.
I was going to say there was a very fun article in the New Yorker recently.
Oh, the Patricia Marks.
Where, right. And she literally came up with emotional support turtle and an emotional support llama.
The turtle story is so funny. I just have to say she was going into the Frick collection to see the Vermeers. And if you've ever been to the Frick collection in New York on Fifth Avenue in about 70th Street, it's a pretty staid and established institution. It's
been there forever. Wasn't there a snake in Carnegie Hall or something?
Well,
like that?
But she brought, Patricia Marks brought in her big five-year-old turtle. Oh, he's big for 5 years, they said.
Yeah.
And they said, no, you can't bring the turtle. There are no turtles allowed. And so she brought out her letter showing that it was an emotional support animal.
Right.
Long story short, they let her bring in the turtle to look at the Vermeers in the Frick collection.
But that brings up a good point. The key to having an emotional support animal is you have to have a mental health professional certify a person's need for an ESA.
Which you can get online.
And
For a fee.
Basically, I can guarantee that you could, you for $150, you could probably get a letter online for anything.
And one of those little vests at Amazon
that
says ESA on it,
Now, the reason why this is topical, the reason why we're talking about this today is, well, this is a lot of fun. There's a group of people out there that need their service dogs to help them cope with life. And because there's all these ESAs running around, going into places like grocery stores, where there isn't a single statute on the books that allows an emotional support animal into a grocery store with you.
But the proprietors yield because in this politically correct...
Bingo.
Thing. They don't want to have a lawsuit, so they just say, okay, go ahead.
Right.
But
right.
They can also be found in violation by the health department.
Exactly. And they take the risk of the food establishment is the one who's going to be paying the fine if an illegal ESA is in their premises inspecting meat. And this is where it gets tricky. But as Joe says, it's difficult because who amongst us is brave enough to risk offending the American with Disabilities Act to challenge somebody who, you know, at the end of the day, we all want to have an easy life and we don't want to put ourselves at risk by challenging this. But the reason why this is a problem is because of all these emotional support animals taking advantage of the accommodation that our society has made for animals who are genuinely
service
there.
Animals.
Yes.
All right. We're going to give the number out again. This is just one topic we're covering. We're going to talk about how pets improve our well-being as well, seniors and otherwise. 1-800-743-9576 because you can change the subjects as well. If you want to ask Adele Mieres, animal behaviorist, dog behaviorist, he knows a little bit about cats too, and Dr. Ian Kupke from Sable Chase Animal Clinic. 1-800-743-9576.
Well, our first caller wanted to talk about euthanasia procedures, so I thought maybe we'd start on a little brighter note. This is we'll get to Sam though.
Yeah.
Wendy in Miami. Hi.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have two dogs, and one of them, she's 9 years old, and she's always been very social. And we adopted an abandoned puppy, and since the puppy has come along. She was 5 months at the time. Now she's a year. Cora, the older dog, is very, very protective and tries to run around and herd all the dogs in the dog park and, you know, doesn't want her to play with the other dogs. And she's been quite aggressive on the leash with other dogs as well. And I not sure what I should do about that.
Adele?
Yes. Hi, Wendy. That is a pack disorder issue. So basically, when that puppy comes in, the older dog likes the puppy, and which is a great scenario, and now starts being protective over the puppy, because as long as it all works out between the two dogs, the humans don't feel they need to interfere and show any sort of leadership. But then stuff like this can happen. So there's a few things that can be done from a training perspective where you would show the older dog that she doesn't have to protect the younger dog, that you got it, that you're the leader. You know, real basic thing is like with the food, for example, you may want to teach him to do a look or watch me command and then have the food down and then have the puppy go and eat first and then the older dog, and you would alternate that order. That's just an example of a real basic daily behavior you could do, daily behavior work you could do with your pack there to start showing the older dog that indeed she doesn't have to be the leader over the younger dog.
Okay. All right. So put down the food for the puppy first one day and then change it up the next day.
Pretty much. There's other things to be done, but that's a real basic step to get started with.
Okay.
Okay. And thanks for the call.
Okay. Thanks, Wendy.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And as promised, Sam in Kendall. Hi.
Hi, Joe. It's not as a depressing subject as you might think. In fact, we'll talk about emotional support of the owner, so to speak, instead of the animal.
Nice.
A number of years ago, actually before Dr. Kupke owned Sable Chase, we had taken our dog to that clinic. And when he got older, he developed a tumor, which was slowly growing. And by that time, Dr. Kupke had taken over, and my then-wife made an inquiry as to how much it would cost to euthanize the dog, and we were quoted two prices, X amount if they did it alone and X amount if we were in attendance. And my first reaction, gee, that's terrible. They're going to charge us for being there with the dog. Well, bottom line, it was several more months before we decided to proceed when the animal was no longer comfortable. And we paid the extra fee, and I will tell you, in retrospect, I was more than happy and understood exactly what it was about. It took more time to prepare the room and whatnot, and it was as good an experience as it can be. And I've been wanting to talk about this for a number of months over the last couple of years when I heard Dr. Kupke just never could get through. But if someone ever got on the other end of that and thought that they were getting ripped off or charged extra, it was worth every extra thing.
Doctor, is that a usual procedure?
Yeah,
I've never heard of that.
I think there might have been some miscommunication because when folks inquire as to the price of doing the procedure, the choices are whether you want us to take care of the disposition of things afterwards in a way where they're cremated and not returned to you. And that is cheaper than if you want to have the cremated remains returned to you. That's the only discussion.
Well, all I can tell you is it got miscommunicated, but I will again, I thought it was the other way around as I expressed, and I wanted to again say thank you. It was as good an experience as one can expect under the circumstances.
Thank you. But honestly, I mean, I will go on record as saying this, that there's no extra charge for anybody to be present, and I would be very surprised if any veterinarian had that differentiation, really. We all welcome people being with them to the end, because I think if I were a pet, that's what I would want.
Okay, we're speaking with...
Not until 32.
Oh, are you? Oh, I thought 19. Okay. All right, well...
So we can continue on with Rob in Fort Lauderdale. Our number, 1-800-743-9576. Rob, you're up. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you for doing this topic today. I'm a veteran with severe PTSD, and I have a service dog. I've had him for about a year now. And in that year, I've been able to completely get off of my regular anxiety medications and depend on him.
Excellent.
And it's really important for people to know the distinction between an emotional support and a service animal. because those of us who have service animals, when there's confusion, it causes us a great deal of stress sometimes when an owner says, no, no, your dog can't come into my establishment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that's exactly what inspired us to do this segment, because stories like yours are awesome, because that's what we want to see is these wonderful dogs helping people to find a solution to their situation. That's awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rob, for calling. We have an emailer. Maybe you can interpret the email for me, because I can't understand it. It says, therapy dogs are trained for the basic disciplines and are certified. Reconcile was taken off the market. Can you recommend another name? What's Reconcile?
First of all, therapy dogs are not certified. They're registered. Service dogs are certified.
Okay, so that's one.
Meaning they've had training.
This is
meaning it's just kind of like a technicality. People, therapy dogs get training that's specifically for therapy dog work. It's a lot less involved training than service dog work, and they call it registered.
Okay, so registered, that's one therapy distinction, David. But I don't think we know what Reconcile is, do we?
That may be a drug. I'm not sure.
It sounds like a drug. There's always new medications coming out, but one of the things that I always stress whenever you're dealing with a situation where there's a pet that is in need of some kind of, if you will, psychological help, consultation with a board-certified behaviorist is a good idea. If it's beyond the scope of a regular trainer, when you're resorting to medication, it should be part of a training regimen in order to basically help the dog's solution, the solution be found. Because if you just rely on the drugs alone, in my opinion, you very rarely get a desirable outcome. You just get a dog that's on drugs.
Right. Okay.
And we'll move along to Shauna in Lake Worth.
Okay. Is it for my turn?
Yes, Shauna.
So I have a question. I worked at a small movie theater in Lake Worth. There's lots of animals, pets in Lake Worth. And we were told by a woman who brought her service dog, quote unquote, in, that it is illegal to ask for proof that an animal is a service animal. You're not allowed to ask.
That is incorrect. There are two questions that are legally allowed by an establishment. One is a simple closed-ended question, is your dog a service dog? That's a yes or no.
As opposed to an emotional support animal or
is your dog a service dog?
Okay.
That's it. That's the one. And the other legal question that can be asked, and this question can be asked in a number of different ways, but essentially the question is, what task does your dog provide to have your dog be a service dog? In other words, what does your dog do? Now, there is where it gets tricky, because a lot of people may go into disclosing medical information when they're not supposed to, and then you can be in you could be in trouble with our HIPAA laws, which have to do with medical information being dispersed to people that are not truly allowed to have them, and with a written signed note. So essentially, when you ask a question like that, you want to ask, how does your service dog help you? And that kind of opens it up. Now, they can answer, my service dog helps me keep me sane. That's it. And that's all you can take. Some people will go into more detail. So that's kind of like a very broad question. But those two questions are allowed.
So there's no sort of like identity card for a service dog, kind of like a driver's license. Is there some reason we don't have that, where they could just show their service dog card and...
You know, if I may throw in my two cents, when I actually wrote the article that led to this show, I can't tell you how many people with genuine disabilities raised that issue and basically said that they would be prepared to go through the certification process precisely so they can avoid this kind of situation. And I think that's definitely, in my opinion, I think that's a wonderful solution. One of the points behind asking that question, is your dog a service dog, though, is to get the person with the dog to commit to saying it is a service dog, because now there's a law on the books in Florida, went into effect July 1st, making it a second-degree misdemeanor to claim a dog to be a service dog that isn't. So basically, it's kind of like a little trap, because you're saying, is your dog a service dog? You say yes, you are now legally representing this pet as a service dog, and according to this legislation, you've basically committed yourself. So if you're actually not telling the truth, you just broke the law.
And what's the penalty?
It's $500 fine, up to 60 days in jail.
Okay. Oh.
That's an ouch.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And next caller, we have Giselle in Miami. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a question not related to service animals. I have a six-year-old dog. He's walked outside, but he lives indoors. And I want to say that maybe for the last 2 weeks, he started to have like an odor come out of his ear, shake his ear. And I don't know if it's related or not, but he also has these spot flakes like dandruff. So I was wondering if you have any idea, because, of course, I don't know if it's something that, you know, I could be at risk for my family. So if you could shed some light on what could possibly be going on with my dog.
Well, simply put, the smell from the ears, most likely an ear infection. So for that, you'd need to see a vet. For the flaky skin, again, it's a dermatological issue, might be related to allergies, might be a sign of something else. But I would definitely see a veterinarian for that one, because every case is different, but it's not something you should try to manage yourself.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Giselle. We have an emailer. Stephanie adopted a younger cat from a shelter, introduced him to her 5-year-old cat. The older cat is very angry, and the younger cat is very calm, but has already urinated in her bed. Any suggestions?
The younger cat should not be allowed so much freedom at the beginning, because that's probably what's getting the older cat mad. The younger cat being allowed even to go and pee on the or even be on the younger on the older cat's bed is a mistake to begin with. A lot of times when people bring in another cat, one of the best things to do is get another cat tree, get a couple of different beds that they can have.
Yeah, and definitely another litter box.
Another litter box, yeah. Things like that, where a lot of people think, oh, it's a big litter box, it's a big tree. No. You know, they can share it, they can be friends or, you know, brothers and share it. Yeah, but that's generally not a great idea with cats.
Because they don't naturally bond together.
No. No.
Yeah. They're not your usual pack animals as dogs are. Yeah. Not the domestic cat, anyway.
Except for lions.
Okay, right. Stephanie, I hope that helps.
And next up, it's Henry in Miami. Henry, go ahead.
Hi, I am calling about my older dog. She's 15, and she just developed old dog vestibular disease. So she basically has sort of vertigo and is falling everywhere and just can't stand up straight. It's so sad to see. She's on antibiotics now and meclizine, which is just like a people medicine for vertigo, which I take for vertigo. But I just am having a hard time getting her to eat, and I'm hand feeding her anything she wants. But I can't figure out why she won't eat. Is there something else? Is it because she's nauseous and I should give her a different medicine as well?
Well, that's the most likely explanation. Basically, vestibular disease is a deep ear infection. So
right. And you know what? I heard the other caller and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, she should have. She should make ear infections can be so serious.
They can.
Yeah.
Just like people, you know.
Just like people, yeah.
Any of our listeners out there have kids. I know several parents who've gone through quite a journey with our kids and ear infections.
Yeah.
But an untreated ear infection can progress to vestibular disease. But my best assessment is that there's some nausea. And you should see your vet to get some medicine to address
that. Okay, I'll get that extra medicine. And, you know, now that I've done reading about the disease, when it first happened 5 days ago, I thought she had had a stroke because she just couldn't stand up.
Yes.
And everything in Google says that's what people first think. And It makes me so sad to think that a lot of people just put their dogs down.
Oh, heavens no. No, no. All it takes is a peek into the ear to see everything.
Right. And now she's getting much better. I just want her to eat. Yeah. Thanks so much.
That's good information.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks, Henry, for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before
Bye.
We take our break, let's give out the telephone number again. We have a few lines open. 1-800-743-9576.
1-800-743-9576. Email is radio@wlrn.org. We're speaking with Dr. Ian Kupke from Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Mietes from Canine Advisors. At your service. We'll be right back.
And we're back. It's Topical Currents at your service. Our topic today is pet care. We have our veterinarian and our animal behaviorist here. Let's go quickly back to our calls. Lorraine in Boynton Beach. Hi there.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, doctor.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I'm here.
Yes.
Hi. I have a very gentle and loving cat. That I adopted from the shelter when he was about 4, and he's turning Halloween 12. And over the past year, he lost a lot of his teeth. I think he's down to like maybe 2 teeth in his mouth.
Yeah.
And he was living all his life on dry cat food, but he can't chew it now. So I've been giving him wet food to eat, and He eats the food, but then he stops eating it, and then he cries, and he won't eat what's in the dish unless I spill it out and I give him new food, and then he cries in the middle of the night. I wake up and give him some food, and he eats some of it, but then cries
more. Quick question,
if
I may. When was the last time the kitty got to see a veterinarian?
He's due. He hasn't been to the vet in a little while, honestly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the reason why I ask that is that a good vet will make an oral exam part of their overall physical exam. It shouldn't be charged extra. It's just you look in the mouth as you're looking at the cat. And chances are your kitty has some dental issues. I'd be willing to bet that some of those teeth that are remaining may actually have cavities that are causing pain. They may be some loose teeth, but certainly it sounds like dental disease is interfering in your kitty's ability to eat a meal, because it's probably there's probably some gum disease there. There's probably some pain there. Definitely infection. And I would definitely recommend getting that kitty looked at and assessed, because at the very least, the poor little thing probably needs his teeth cleaned. But I have a feeling that there's probably one or two or more teeth causing some horrendous discomfort.
So do those teeth then should they be pulled?
Well, they're pulled if they're causing distress. We don't really fill kitties' teeth. There's probably a few studies out there that have tried, and so far none of them have really done any had any success with it. But if a tooth is dead, it's better off out of the kitty than in there.
The vet will tell you if the teeth needs if the teeth or the tooth needs
yes,
to be pulled.
Exactly. I mean, I wouldn't prejudge. I think the first step is to have a professional look inside kitty's mouth and talk about it. You know,
is it normal for people to maybe brush their cat's teeth? Some cats I know that I wouldn't want to dare try it.
Some cats will will tolerate tooth brushing. Yeah, there is an enzymatic toothpaste that's the very best idea. There's also a product called DentaCleanse, Cleanse-a-Dent type products that you can put in the water. But the generally accepted thing is to make sure your kitty's got a good physical exam every year, so that these things can be avoided before they become very bad.
All right, we have an emailer. There's so much information these days about pets being obese.
Yes.
And we know that it's very dangerous, and I think we've done a show on that.
We have.
Indeed.
Okay. Are there charts or indexes like our BMI that we can use for our pets?
You know, I'm sure the doctor can answer that as far as charts, but I'm just old school. I look at the pet from the top. If the pet's shoulders meet completely the hips and you don't see any turn in the back of the ribs, agreed, you got like a little walking closet there in your hands. So he's probably overweight. So we want to just see a little entrance behind the last ribs in the area that's called the flank, between the rear legs and the hips. You want to see a little bit of an entrance there. As the dog gets a little older, like when we get a little older, we pack on a few more pounds, you might see, you know, that that little entrance gets covered a bit, but you don't want to see it all thick in that area, because then your pet's probably overweight. And with cats, you can really tell a lot, because, you know, they kind of sag their belly.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Couldn't agree with Adele more. Dogs need to have a waist. They need to have a tucked tummy. We use a body conditioning score of 1 to 9. So obviously 9 obese, 1 very, very, very skinny. A good number is 5. So a tiny little bit on the Gordo side of normal, if you will. Obesity in dogs, and especially, is a huge problem. And it's sometimes due to medical problems, but most of the time it's just plain old overfeeding.
And we move to Layla in Miami. Hi.
Hi, Layla.
Go ahead. You're up.
This is Layla. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Layla.
Okay, great. I have two things. Now that you mentioned with the obesity, I have a cat that is very young. She's just a year old, but she's quite big. I had her spayed, and then she just gained a lot of weight, but she doesn't eat a lot of food, and she doesn't eat any other food than the other cats don't eat. So is that a natural disposition, or should I put her on a special diet?
Well, first of all, individual variation happens in cats, just like people. I know people who can eat anything they want and not gain an ounce, and others just think chocolate and they bloom up. But the bottom line is that overweightness could be due to a medical problem. I mean, we do have cats who are diabetic and they become obese.
Okay.
But the other thing is, it simply could be that for your kitty, the amount you're feeding is still too much. But okay. I would go ahead, get the kitty assessed medically, probably some blood work to make sure there's no medical cause, and then talk about reducing the diet under veterinary supervision.
Okay, and then I have one, which was my original question. The obesity question just came up since you just spoke about
ahead,
that.
Layla.
But my original question was, I just rescued a puppy, and he is staying now for a couple of weeks now here with two other dogs that he gets along very well. But he has taken to pooping and peeing at the entrance of an apartment on my premise. And I'm trying to see, how can I train him to poop and pee in another area of the yard?
Well, immediately with the puppy question, you want to take the puppy on the leash to the area that you want him to go on. If
okay.
for whatever reason he ends up going in an area you don't want him to go on without him seeing you, you want to pick up the stuff that he did. Pick it up with a paper towel with a pee, or you mm-hmm. pick up the poop. The dog didn't mm-hmm. see you do this, and you put it in the area that you want him to go, and then
okay.
you bring the puppy around there and let him sniff up the fresh pee or poop that he did where he wasn't supposed to do in the area he's supposed to do it.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. That's
You're
really
welcome.
Helpful.
Okay. Joe D has a 7-year-old autistic son. She's interested in getting a service dog to help him with attention issues, social interaction, and companionship. Can a dog be trained for those purposes, and what is the best way to proceed? I understand service dogs can be very expensive.
Absolutely, on both of those. Yes, a dog can be trained to help that child in a number of different ways, and they can be very expensive. You have a couple options. Either you go and get yourself a trained service dog. Oftentimes there's a wait list for that, probably running somewhere between $16,000
to $28,000.
Really?
Yes. And yeah,
is there any way around that?
Absolutely. I do it all the time. We identify the needs of the child. If, for example, there's any allergy to dog hair, then we need to know what dog we need to get for that child. And once we determine what dog breeds we can get for the child and the ages that we want to be looking at, we go to a local shelter, we test a few different dogs, we get a great dog from a local shelter, and we train him for that child. And generally, in cases like this, it runs somewhere in the $6,000 to $9,000 if we have to do the, and it could be paid in parts if we have to do the training typically within 6 months to a year and a half.
So that's half the cost of...
It's usually, yeah, less than half less than the cost. Yeah.
Are there any foundations for low-income people
that need service dogs? Like, what about the vets?
There's a number of foundation and groups out there.
Yeah,
some of my clients have used some of these, like the MS.
No, I don't mean veterinarians. I meant like the war veteran that called and that uses his dog as a service dog.
I have a client with MS. She's pretty amazing. I trained her boxer. And she found different ways of funding her training through different groups. I got to say, the MS Society out of Fort Lauderdale, they're amazingly helpful, and they were able to help this lady with a good portion of her service dog training. There's also the Modest Needs Foundation. Different foundations out there have different requirements, and one should know what those are before requesting any funds from them. And I can give a number of examples, but for the purpose of this show right here, there are groups out there. You just have to do some research.
Okay, Joe D. So look into if there are ways of helping get funding from autism groups or whatever for your service dog.
And we'll take another caller before our break. Betty in Miami, hi.
Hi, thank you guys for taking the call. I have a dog that we rescued 2 years ago. He's beautiful, always was loving with the kids and with anyone that would come visit us. We had a German Shepherd at the time that died a year after we rescued the puppy. Right after, I would say 3 months after the Shepherd passed away, the puppy obviously was no longer a puppy. He was like a year and a half, and he just started, he became aggressive towards any stranger or anyone that used to visit the house, like friends of the kids. He would just growl at people and became very protective over the family, especially the kids. We did some basic training, but that did not take care of the problem. And the comments that I've been getting from other trainers is that it will progress with time. And usually these are issues that don't go away, that they're, once the dog is aggressive for whatever reasons, it's really hard to control.
Adele has some feelings on this.
I'm just like holding my tongue over here.
You need to get a better trainer.
Yeah, exactly. You need to get somebody who knows what they're doing.
When I heard you guys now, I was like, okay, I need to call.
These are very resolvable issues.
Absolutely.
We can get into some theories as to why your dog has gotten there, but for the purposes of being concise here, I just want to let you know, all those behaviors can be resolved, and they can actually be resolved rather quickly. Like in one lesson with us, you can really see a big difference already. A lot of it comes down to real basic interactions that are probably happening right now where you're just not showing some proper leadership with him. Add a little structure on here and then work on some of his triggers as far as reconditioning what it means when somebody comes home. You know, somebody comes to your house, you tell your dog, go to your place, and he goes to his spot there, and he waits there until you tell him to say hello, and you teach him what say hello means. That's it. You're going to resolve that issue. So this is all actually very resolvable, but it's just you got to work with people and know what they're doing with
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Okay, Betty, thanks for calling.
All right, thank you.
Okay, we're at your service with Adele Mieres from Canine Advisors and Dr. Ian Kupke from Sable Chase Animal Clinic. One more short break, and we'll be back.
And we're back. It's Topical Currents at your service. We continue with Dr. Ian Kupke and also Adele Mieres, dog trainer and behaviorist. And we're right to the phones. This is an interesting dilemma.
Hello.
Juan in Miami Beach. Hi.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
Hi, Juan.
I had a quick question. So Sunday night, my dog ate a roach trap.
Oh.
He is doing good. He's an English bulldog, 8 years old. He's been doing fine. I don't know if I should take him to the vet or not. It's been already a couple of days, but he's doing good. So,
what happened to the trap?
We just had it on the kitchen. The kitchen is completely blocked off. He doesn't have access to it. Somehow he got access to it, and I just saw the trap in his bed, all chewed up.
I would definitely get your dog assessed. I mean, at this point, whatever was eaten has gone through his system. and just make sure that there was nothing in that trap that could cause problems later. See if you can get the package that the roach trap came in, and mm-hmm. so when you bring your dog to a vet, you can actually show them the package so that they can tell exactly what chemicals
are ingested. So I should definitely, after 3 days, take them to the vet?
Absolutely. You know, it better safe than sorry, you know?
And maybe it's better to let him eat the roaches.
Yes.
Than the trap.
We tried that for a couple of months, but he didn't work.
I guess he's not a cat, right?
So, okay.
Okay, yeah. Juan, yeah,
thank
maybe,
you.
Okay.
Sorry, it's better to be take a precaution, you know?
Okay, and Rob, who called earlier, the war vet, that is, he was a dog handler in the Army and chose to train his service dog himself.
Yeah.
He used a training manual specifically written for vets with PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
My dog is a rescue American Bulldog Chinook mix who I vetted very carefully. To help raise the funds, I used a GoFundMe campaign. It cost me less than $3,000 before we were task trained. So that's good to know for Joe,
sure.
D.
Mm-hmm.
Also a GoFundMe campaign for her autistic son.
Yes, and that those are good points. It is important to note, though, service dog rules vary per state. So the state of Florida is a state in which you can train your own service dog. However, the state of Georgia is not. The state of Georgia is a lot more regulated. And I have clients who have trained their dogs here, but the same rules of a service dog here may not apply in public in another state like New York, for example. In New York, if you have a service dog, the dog can go in a subway with you, but the dog must wear a muzzle. Here, no. So it's important to know the different rules regarding service dogs per state.
Yes.
Okay.
And we'll move along to Gus in Miami. Hi.
Hello?
Gus, go ahead.
I'm sorry if this sounds ridiculous, but I don't know. I'm just wondering, we seem to personify our animals so much, give them names, we give them rights, and rightfully so. And so I'm just wondering if there's ever been a case that you know of, or if you would assume that maybe a service animal or a therapy animal would itself be in need of a service animal or a therapy animal.
I have actually had that situation. We had a Great Dane that was a service animal, a mobility assistance dog for an individual. And the Dane, at about 8 years of age, became completely blind. And we had to use another dog to help the Dane get around, but the other dog was a lab, and the lab did not have the size that they needed with the Dane in order to help this gentleman transfer from a chair to a bed. So the Dane continued being the service dog for the gentleman, and the lab was a service dog for the Dane. That the lab being a service dog for the Dane is not considered a service dog per the law.
Okay.
It's only a service dog for the human.
All right. Diane wants to know, here's a very interesting question. She is 60 and working. Her husband is 64 and retired. So one person is at home. They have two cats. They had dogs years ago. They want to know if they're too old to get a puppy.
I don't think you're ever too old. No. I think you've got to introduce pets into an existing household gradually. Adele can probably speak more on that, but
I think she's thinking that, you know, how long is she going to live? And but she's only 60.
She's only 60.
And her husband's 64. Hey, 60 is the new 30.
Exactly.
let's call them younger folks, maybe in their 20s or 30s, might get into a puppy and their lives are actually not adequate for a puppy. But yet, when you're 60 and you may be able to be retired or partly retired, you may have more time.
Well, her husband is at home retired.
Yes. Yeah, so you actually may be better puppy owners than other people that may be younger.
Okay. Grace wants us to know that Reconcile is flavored, chewable dog Prozac. Okay. All right. We'll have to remember that. All right.
Okay. Kevin in Oakland Park. We're a little short on time, Kevin. Hi.
Hi, I had a 4-year-old rescue who is absolutely petrified of thunder. If she even thinks there's thunder coming in or sees even a little bit of lightning, she shakes uncontrollably. Now, we've tried to coddle her, and we actually have some Xanax for her that was prescribed by the vet. So I'm wondering if there's anything else, being that the, you know, the thunderstorms last.
The thunder shirt.
So long.
The
yeah.
thunder shirt.
So does this actually work? I mean, I don't have faith in some of these infomercials.
The problem with almost all behavior modifying solutions is that they work on some pets. So you basically need to work through the solutions available to find something that's going to work for your pet. I have two dogs. One was absolutely responsive to the thunder shirt. The other was not.
Okay.
Again, you need to work with a veterinarian in terms of behavioral modification drugs, because there's a therapeutic range. Too much will make your dog excessively sedated. Too little won't work. Sometimes you have to use combinations. And also working with a professional trainer is often a very good solution, because especially with some chemical courage, you can actually work through this.
Just real quick here, you can create a safe space for your dog and try to use those thunderstorm type of music that's available to mimic. You still can't mimic the electrical currents, but to mimic the sound and to start conditioning her to go into this safe space. Safe space should be inside of a closet with hanging clothes to muffle the sound. Mm. You want the hangers to be plastic, not metal, so there's no vibration. And a space to use would be a plastic crate, like the bottom part of the crate that does not have the little metal grates on it. Those travel crates, use just the bottom side, and you just put a real thick comforter on there to kind of comfort the dog, but as well to muffle some of those vibrations.
It's so hard in South Florida because we have so many of those, you know?
Every day. We actually did a program on it, and one of the things I do not recommend is acepromazine, which is a drug that basically sedates them but doesn't take away any of the anxiety. And one of the problems we face in Florida is that we have a storm every day about 3 o'clock. Most of us work, so you pop your dog a pill, dog sedated all morning, pill wears off, thunderstorm hits.
Right.
So,
okay. Yeah. We have Stephen has a 10-year-old Westie. She's licked her feet incessantly her whole life. When they leave the house, they come back, her feet are soaked. His partner scolds her and treats it like it's a behavior issue. The vet says it's a white dog thing. They all do it. They should accept it. And with that, we've tried everything from a Topica to Benadryl to relieve any physical cause. Any advice? Is it behavioral?
Well, there could be behavioral components, but in my experience, there's often an allergic component. So a Topica, Benadryl, they're anti-allergy meds. I personally would, assuming that the physical exam bears this out, consider working your dog up for allergies. And I would say definitely consider allergy testing to find out what it is that's causing this, and then address the results of that test. It could be a diet change, could be an environmental change. It's certainly manageable.
Okay. I guess we don't. Andrew has a 3-year-old rat terrier. His left hind leg is bothering him. When they go for walks, he stops using his leg. They sometimes get him to use the leg properly by making him sit and rubbing his hip for him. Do you think he could be doing it to get attention, or does he have a hip problem?
He definitely has an orthopedic problem.
He says he does it outside, not inside.
My assessment, it would either be hip or possibly knee.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it could be something related to his feet. If he's hurt his pad or something, but definitely get that checked out.
Okay. Well, as usual, we're sorry to our callers and emailers we couldn't get to, but Dr. Ian Kupke, owner and lead practitioner of Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall, it's sablechasevet@gmail.com, is that right? Or is it askdrk@sablechaseanimalclinic.com?
Ask Dr. K. Ask Dr. K.
So that's SABAL, chaseanimalclinic.com. Ask Dr. K. Adele Mieres, adele@k9advisors.com. Adele, Dr. Kupke, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
And apologies to those callers that we couldn't get on our program. Our producer, Richard Ive, technical direction from Michael Stock. And we have free audio archives and downloads at our website. That's WLRN.org. And also check out the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tune in for tomorrow's program for advice about those disquieting relationship breakups. We'll have a licensed therapist on hand to take calls. She's Catherine Woodward Thomas, who's written the book Conscious Uncoupling: How to Break Up in a Whole New Way. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.